We must constantly look at things in a different way.
The Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast was created by two physical therapists out of the desire to learn more about the different educational roles in physical therapy and healthcare, and how healthcare education works by talking with educational leaders and people with different perspectives within physical therapy and across interdisciplinary lines on how education can be improved to disrupt the status quo of healthcare education. This is our journey, and thanks for listening. Are you a third-year physical therapy student that excels on tests when you have study guides, checklists, and deadlines? With all of the information available about how to prepare for the NPTE, it's easy to get disorganized and not feel prepared going into the big day. NPTE Prep Success is an online course that provides PT students easy-to-use study guides and step-by-step guidance through the NPTE preparation. To learn more, visit kylericeprep.com. Thank you again all for your continued support, and now for the show.
Yeah, Greg, you bring up a lot of really good points, and I think one of the ones that you just made that really resonated with me was the fact that we need to probably be looking as a society at wellness and prevention as a treatment, you know, more so than some of the things we're dealing with now. And I think, you know, Mike Eisenhart and the APHPT are really doing a great job of trying to bring awareness to wellness and prevention and the fact that it is such a, you know, it's kind of a scary thought, because realistically we're trying to get people to do the right things so that they don't go into the medical model and they don't have to be treated. We treat them on the front end so that they never see us, which almost makes us, you know, not needed. But that's the thing. We are needed on the front end to make it work. So really it's kind of an interesting dichotomy.
Exactly. I mean, aren't we sort of the best kept secret on the planet? And we seem to be the only people that know that. I'm super glad you brought up APHPT, as well as Mike Eisenhart, who I think is a rock star in that area. And I've had some conversations with him via email and in person as well. And, you know, Mike is already sort of addressing that concern in innovative ways in our current reimbursement structure or payment structure. And that's really the most difficult part of it all, is this, that the whole complex healthcare system or systems that we have in the United States don't lend itself or themselves to this kind of patient management. And that is a philosophy that is, it needs to change. I think that we're beginning to see a wave of change related to that. Society, I think, is ready for it. I certainly know practitioners, especially physical therapists, are ready for that. Who seems to be lagging behind are the payers, and their models of payment simply require someone to be sick or ill or injured in order for them to reimburse for it. And so the reimbursement systems have to change to be able to support that kind of model. But Mike's got some great ideas of how he's managing that even now in 2018. And we can all learn from those ideas. But I do think that that kind of patient management will be supported much more so in the future as our payment systems begin to evolve to support that. And PTs have to be ready for it, because you're exactly right. We are well positioned to do it. And highly trained to be able to do it, and could impact society's health, wellness, longevity, quality of life, all of those things on a scale that I think hasn't even been measured in terms of, we keep talking about the cost of healthcare. If we would invest in some upfront payment to deal with managing these things before they become an expensive healthcare event, then that's how we bend the cost curve. And so, yeah, I think we as a profession have to be ready to do that. And so to tie it back into what we were really talking about is that I think to be ready to do that, our physical therapists have to be efficient. They have to be highly educated. They have to be not providing care that isn't evidence-based, that they should be providing care within boundaries of evidence, but also care that obviously is patient-centered and focused on their own personal experiences. But the variation in care that we currently see when patients with similar conditions see 10 different PTs, that variation, there's a lot of it that is unwarranted. And the operative word there is unwarranted, because some variability is okay, but unwarranted variability is not okay.
Yeah, I think, you know, this new model that we're talking about, Greg, where, you know, we're looking at the preventative and the wellness, I mean, it's coming, whether we like it or not. I mean, it is definitely coming down the path. And I think, you know, Brandon had Gail Jensen, Bob Rowe, and John Childs on an episode not too long ago, and they all said the same thing. You know, society's calling for it. They're craving for it. Physical therapists are primed and ready. The only people not on board yet is the third-party payers. And part of that issue is it's hard to pay for something that doesn't happen, right? It's hard to give a monetary value to preventing something from happening. So they just don't see it yet, and they just don't get it. When meanwhile, on the front end, if we do prevent something huge like high blood pressure or, you know, like diabetes, type 2 diabetes.
Even a fall with a fracture.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, you're saving tons of money on the back end. And I think, like you said, they are starting to see that a little bit now. And it's just a matter, it's not, you know, a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
100%. Agree.
I also think one of the barriers to that is our society is, unlike what we've been talking about here, our society is more trained to be a little more short-sighted. Mm-hmm. And even if you look at how, again, we've been doing a lot of comparison of physical therapy to the medical model. If you look at how even physicians are paid, what physicians are highly paid? Well, they're the specialists that are doing the very complex surgeries that involve very, very complex patients. And yet your primary care physician who is counseling patients on their diabetes doesn't get paid for any of their time. So why would a physician be incentivized to counsel a patient on their diabetes, even though that physician is very well trained and has had a lot of specialty training within their residency to be able to counsel a patient on how to manage their diabetes? Yet,
exactly, you know, right.
And so, again, I think that one, if we're going to change these large systemic problems within healthcare, we have to be able to show outcomes that this is something that is of value, value-based payment systems versus the fee-for-service-based payment systems. And I think until physicians, family physicians are making as much as, we'll say, an orthopedic surgeon, you will be able to solve that problem of having a shortage of family care physicians. And that kind of goes back to the piece on return on investment. So if you go back to school, what are you going to make a bit larger return on investment? Becoming an internal medicine physician or a family physician, or becoming an orthopedic surgeon?
Right.
Obviously, you're going to make a larger investment on orthopedic surgeon, being an orthopedic surgeon. So what's your thought, Greg, kind of going back to the piece about wanting to require these residencies, yet the cost of education is very high and the pay that you get as a physical therapist comparatively is very, very low.
Right. So again, I will try to stretch the listeners to think out not 1 or 2 days or weeks or months or years, but let's think out 1 or 2 decades from now. If PTs are in a primary care role, if we are on the front end of managing chronic disease and managing health and wellness and managing quality of life on the front end before things happen, and if, so there's a lot of ifs here, I know, if payers begin to change payment models to pay for that, then perhaps, number one, the income of the physical therapist could change. So there's that potential. So let's assume that that happened and then the ROI gets a little bit better. If, however, that doesn't happen, no one has a crystal ball here to know, and there's not a lot more money to be doled out. But if that doesn't happen, then we have to look at the cost of education to the physical therapist now, and what it might be in 10 years or 20 years. And at the rate it's going, it's going to be unaffordable for people. And so we have to do something to bend the cost curve relative to tuition and relative to training our future, or else you're exactly right. We, I don't know how many potential PT students we lose to pharmacy or other professions where it's less schooling and the incomes are higher. So the ROIs look better in other professions. And so we have to begin to think about those things. And adding a mandatory residency doesn't help that equation. At least it doesn't sound like it does on the surface. I would argue, though, that there are some models of residency education that work in a way that do not add cost to the student or the resident who potentially could pay less in tuition if some of the clinical training were done post-graduation, whether that is pre- or post-licensure, that's another debate. But if some of the clinical training were done post-graduation, then a lot of tuition potentially wouldn't have to be spent on clinical training that involves primarily the work of the clinical site and obviously some work of the academic institution as well. So there needs to be kind of a partnership there. But I think there are ways to shave some cost to that phase of the education. There's also ways to pay for residency education that do not have to cost the participant a ton of money. And there are already a variety of different financial models out there for residency education. Some of them charge the resident tuition, but pay the resident pretty much 100% of what a PT would be making. But the resident, in this case, pays some tuition to the residency program. There are other models where the resident is paid a little bit less money than the typical PT might be paid. The national average, by the way, is about 2/3 of what a regular PT would make. A resident makes about 2/3 of that. So the cost of providing the education is obviously wrapped up in that other third that the resident never sees. So that's sort of similar to a medical model. What's different is that physicians are funded federally. And so there's federal funding through the Medicare program that offsets much of the cost of providing residency education in medicine. And we do not have that luxury in physical therapy. And I wouldn't expect it because I just don't see the dollars happening. And certainly Congress can't agree to add dollars to anything. So I wouldn't expect us to see that. But there may be in the future, because we can't see 20, 30 years out right now. But there may be a way in the future if our residency educational programs were federally recognized, then perhaps there would be some way to offset costs in some way that we don't even know about right now. But we don't have federal recognition of our residency education programs. We're not recognized by the Department of Education because we're not certified as a CHEA accrediting agency. And so that's a goal of ABPTRFE, is to become certified and recognized by the Department of Education. And then we can kind of see where that leads us. But we're not even at the door right now relative to that. So there are some financial models that I think offset cost of residency education. And I do think that we can do some stuff on the front end relative to entry-level education that could make the ROI more attractive to potential applicants.
So one thing that I think AMA, the American Medical Association, has done over the years that has maybe set a good foundation for physicians to also have larger and more inflated salaries is that they've limited the number of medical schools and the number of physicians that are produced, especially now that there's still the same number of these exist today that existed back when that Medicare law that you mentioned earlier was passed. So what are your thoughts on potentially, you know, going the Jim Gordon route and having that be a solution to the high cost of education, the lower salaries for people, just limiting how many physical therapists are produced and who's producing the physical therapists? What are your thoughts on that?
That's a really interesting question. And I do have some thoughts on it. I think that we need to be very careful about the proliferation of new programs, primarily because I just don't know that we have the right qualified, highly motivated, highly skilled faculty to be able to prepare those people, which may actually have something to do with what we talked about earlier in terms of how our graduates come out so uneven. at the end. So faculty and faculty shortages play into that with additional programs being created. Who are the faculty that are being hired? You know, in medicine, at the turn of the last century, there was a report called the Flexner Report. It was foundational for medical education, and it changed the face of medical education in the United States. And since then, those values and those recommendations are still held to 118 odd years later. And so I have to question, is it time for our own sort of Flexner Report for physical therapy? I certainly personally would not be opposed to that idea of limiting some of the slots available for physical therapists. I think it would have, in the end, a positive impact on the profession.
Yeah, Greg, you are not the first guest to request a PT Flexner report.
That's actually what Scott's getting his EDD in. He's writing it right now.
Awesome.
Good
for you.
We honestly need something soon. I don't know who should be involved and how involved it should be, but I definitely think it's something that's coming. I think we need to take a good hard look at the profession and just decide, you know, what's going to better us in the long run. But you know,
good for you. I agree. I think it's very much needed. So yeah. I applaud you for taking that on.
You know, recently the ABPT-RFE modified the requirements for participants of fellowship programs to include either an American Board of Physical Therapy Specialties specialist certification in the related area of specialty or a completion of an ABPT-RFE accredited residency in a related specialty area as defined within the DFP. Why did the ABPT-RFE implement these new requirements? And what would you say are some of the pros and cons of those requirements?
Well, that question is quite contemporary and is getting a lot of attention right now through the House of Delegates and through a variety of people that are concerned about some of the changes that are now going to take effect a year later than they were originally planned. It's been postponed another year. But to answer your question, I can't really answer why ABPT-RFE did that because I'm not on the board. So I can't speak for the board. So let me first say I'm not on the board. I didn't make those decisions. I didn't have anything to do with those decisions. I just know about those decisions. So I don't know why precisely they were made, but I'll tell you my...
We'll allow you to speculate here, Greg.
Yeah. Let me speculate a little bit.
We're not lawyers.
Okay, good. Only about my personal feelings about why it might have happened. And I will just say that, again, you know, at the very beginning of this conversation, we talked about cart before the horse. And I said something related to we began to certify our specialists before we had a process to train them. And this may be another example of cart before horse. And what I'm referring to is that it just makes sense to me that before you subspecialize, you specialize. And it's almost as simple as that. In other specialty areas and subspecialty areas within physical therapy, for example, neonatal intensive care, that particular specialty, and if you're going to be faculty in a fellowship for neonatal intensive care, you need to have board certification in pediatrics or be a graduate of a pediatric residency program. And so we were already, or the board was already requiring that in every specialty area with one exception, and that was for orthopedic manual physical therapy. And the reason for that has to do with the fact that the OMPT community has had, long before ABPT-RFE even existed, they had a route to a fellowship program that was based on not just an American model of training, but an international model of training. And so they have a long history with this. And ABPT-RFE subsumed part of the accreditation and certification, really, for the fellows of OMPT. And I think, again, I'm completely speculating, that the ABPTRFE thought that the time is now or right for us to equalize the criteria for all of our fellowship training programs so that before you can be faculty in a fellowship program and teach a subspecialty area of content, you need to be board certified in the underlying related specialty area. So I think that's probably where the heads were. I know that they postponed this decision for many years because they were waiting until there was enough people that could serve as faculty who had those criteria, whether they were residency trained or board certified in a related area. And the data that they had supported that there were enough people that could fill the faculty positions and also that there were enough people that would be applicants to the fellowship programs having completed residency training in the underlying specialty area. So I think there's some pros because, again, my brain likes to keep things orderly and I like carts to be behind horses. And so as I think about it, to me, it just makes sense that you're certified in your specialty area before you proceed to a subspecialty area of practice. So that's certainly, I think, a pro or a plus of the new requirement. The only con I can really think of is that some programs, fellowship programs in particular, may have difficulty meeting those requirements in terms of the faculty, only because of the current employment structure. I don't think that they would suffer those consequences for very long, because as I mentioned, I think there are people out there that could fill those needs.
Yeah, those are some really good points, Greg. And this has been a really enlightening conversation. I really appreciate you coming on and talking with us tonight. We like to ask all of our guests this one final question. If you could change one aspect of healthcare education, physiotherapy or otherwise, what aspect would you change and how would you change it?
I think that if I could change anything in physical therapy education, and this would frankly apply to everybody else too, it would be the incorporation of more interprofessional education. And I mean real IPE, where students of different professions learn together and train together. So I think there are tremendous opportunities with interprofessional education on the didactic side of things, but I think there are huge interprofessional educational training opportunities on the clinical training side of things. And that may be an area that we need to expand further. We've done a little bit in physical therapy related to IPE on the didactic side. CAPTI just released in this year, January 1st of 2018, the requirement that entry-level PT education programs have interprofessional education activities. So it's brand new, frankly, in terms of accreditation criteria for our entry-level programs, whereas nursing and other professions have been doing this for a good little while. PT is kind of getting caught up here, and some programs are doing gigantic, huge, creative, wonderful things in this arena. I think that we have a long way to go to improve IPE relative to the clinical training side of things. I get sometimes disappointed when I interact with other professions who have, first of all, no idea that PTs even are doctors of physical therapy, and number two, have no knowledge whatsoever of the scope of practice of physical therapy and what we know and what we can know and what we can manage and what we can do for patients. And that happens in virtually every setting across the country. And if we could change that, just the perception of our colleagues in the health professions, I think that would do us a gigantic favor in terms of the perception within the public. And I think that's another long-term goal because patients don't know what we do. Even we have a hard time describing what we do sometimes. So I think there's huge opportunities relative to interprofessional education, particularly on the clinical education and clinical training side of that. And that would include internships in the entry-level education, but also interprofessional opportunities in residency programs and fellowships.
We covered a lot of ground today, Greg. It's been an amazing conversation. I love that we're thinking 40 years down the line. If we want to get a hold of you on social media, maybe ask more questions or delve more into these topics that we've talked about, how can we find you?
Best way is on Twitter. I'm at Greg Hartley DPT. So at GREGHARTLEYDPT.
Perfect. Well, thanks everybody for joining us today. And thank you, Greg, for your time. Hopefully we'll catch you guys next time.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast, as we greatly appreciate your support to help us advance healthcare education. We are very happy to announce that we have created a new tool to help develop clinicians into better experts. With that being said, we have created the HET Light tool, which LIGHT stands for Learning Integrated Towards Expertise. And what we've done is we've taken our first year's worth of episodes with experts in the fields of healthcare and education, and we've taken one golden nugget or theory on expertise and presented it to you in a very easily consumable format so that people can take one lesson or nugget per week and map out and plan how to incorporate it into your clinical and educational practices. And by the end of the year, we think you'll be pleasantly surprised at how far you've progressed towards becoming an expert. To find out more, please check it out at pteducator.com/HET, which is also available in our show notes. Thank you again all for your continued support.
Thank you for attending class today, and we hope that you learned something and gained value from the content.
If you'd like to schedule office hours with us, feel free to add us on Twitter at HET Podcast, on Instagram, HET Podcast, on Facebook, the Healthcare Education Transformation Podcast, and the homepage, healthcareeducationtransformationpodcast.com.
And for those of you following along in the syllabus, extra credit can be obtained by liking us, sharing us, and leaving a review.
Let's continue our journey up Mount Educational Success as lifelong learners.